wait a minute, wait a turn, minute. On turn on the radio. My homie got a new show and it's time to play it, though. I hope you got in tune. He talking bigger business. He make a lot of moves. He talking Scott Catoon.
Welcome back to WGN and Tech Nori, Beth.
Hey, I'm so happy to be here, Scott.
Of course. It's been a little while. I mean, I feel like I got a tan and then I lost it already, so that's that.
It's a great week to be here.
Yeah, it's a nice day to be here, and then it's going to be ugly again in a couple of days, so like Chicago is, this is like the mecca for global climate change, I think.
Yeah, right, we're a good case study.
I don't know what's going on here, but Al Gore, he's going to try to recount again. So we've got a really interesting show today, because it literally came together completely randomly.
Yeah.
Alita, formerly of Hyde Park Angels, mm-hmm. Terry Brax of Women Tech Founders, and of course, Beth Bond. Everyone's here aligned at the same time. We were going to do the interviews individually, which we will still do. But I thought, why not have everyone sit down and have a conversation, given that it is, in fact, Equal Pay Week?
Woohoo!
Right? So yeah. Let's jump into that. Equal pay, equal representation. I think Chicago is one of those places we're trying to really hang the hat on inclusivity and diversity.
Yeah.
And each one of you come from a very different, not necessarily different as opposed to things, but just different angle and perspective in the deal. Alita dealing with a lot of deploying of capital to companies that, you know, are not well represented by females necessarily. In some cases, they are. Beth, obviously dealing with community and Go Civic like crazy, and Terry with Women Tech Founders across the board and sort of bringing people together. So I want to kind of hand it off to you, Beth, and talk and sort of open the conversation up with what you think is really interesting and who we've got sitting here and introduce the ladies that are sitting with us.
Yeah, great. Let me start with intros. So, of course, we've got the one and only Terry Brax, founder of not only Teacher Care, but also Women Tech Founders, which is a national organization that is really leading the charge in making sure that women are showcased and all kind of diverse startup entrepreneurs can gain access to capital that is so needed in order to scale and grow their startup. So yay, Terry, give us a, did I do that right? Does that sound good?
You always sound good, Beth.
And then I will just say Alita is actually the most unique and searched of her name on the internet. We've just learned.
That is true.
If spelled properly.
If spelled properly.
Is that with the hyphen?
Yes,
the Miranda Wolf. The hyphen's got to be in it.
Miranda Wolf.
Alita Miranda Wolf. Although I bet if you took the hyphen out, it would still be a lot of me. You would still.
I'm sure it is. I'm just thinking the hyphen ties two words together, which is a bundle, and in the search code that could be.
Yeah, the first 18 pages are all her.
That's insane. Well, it's not for a lack of content either, though.
Right.
That is true. I will say that I feel that I'm perpetuating this proliferation of pages just so that I can hide earlier work that I've done. I was a journalist for a long part of my career, and I also wrote when I was in college, and I achieved a certain level of notoriety for doing TV recaps of various TV shows, including Shark Tank.
Now I have to go page 19.
I don't want people to
40.
See those, so I've just got to keep writing. That's why I produce so much content. Just
you are a dynamo in the content world. Like, I feel like we put out a lot of content, and then I look over and see like the what HPA was putting out, which is whether it's HPA or not, it was Alita. Like that's what we saw. But anyway,
so we get to hear a lot about her new startup that's launching on Monday, Ethos.
Yes, very cool. Well, welcome to the show. Most of you have either been here in some capacity or been on the show. I know obviously Terry, you've been on the show many times, even before Tech Nori. And Alita, you have been to the show many, many times. This is your first time actually on it, is it right?
That's right.
Very cool.
I have participated. I feel more like a team member than a participant, so we'll see how that melds together.
Oh, I think it'll be fine. So Beth, I'm going to start with you. Not just because you're the female on this team here between us on the show. I don't want to get myself in too much trouble that early. So I'll leave it to you. What is the first thing? I mean, Equal Pay Week, we kind of prefaced.
Yeah.
What is the first thing that you think with the group we have assembled here that we should be talking about that matters to the community as it pertains to not just females in tech, but also sort of like Terry had mentioned the inclusivity and kind of everyone representation.
So I think, you nailed it. Chicago is really making a huge name for itself in pushing for diversity and inclusion, or inclusion and diversity regarding startup tech founders and investment dollars. And so I think that's obviously a great thread to pull from, but maybe some events that have occurred. You know, this past weekend was incredible over at Westinghouse Vocational Prep. 5,000 2,000 students over the past 8 weeks have been participating in the Chicago Student Invention Convention through Chicago Innovation, which was acquired from Annalise, who founded that organization here in Chicago. So another woman who's on the charge to create diversity and inclusion in startup. And so 5,000 students, 3,000 of which competed in the convention, and a number will be sent on. But it was just so incredible to see students from our South and West sides, North side, really understanding design thinking process and some of the inventions that they put out. I mean, that's why I love to do what I do, is seeing the next generation of products that can make an impact versus just profit, you know? So that was a super cool thing. And I know that we've got events coming up this month with Midwest Women in Tech, and we'll talk about that. So yeah, maybe that's how we can kick it off. Equal Pay Week. Let's chat.
And we have to mention Chicago Innovation Awards. Chicago Innovation are a huge partner and supporter of Technori. Tom Kaczmarski gave the first keynote of my first Technori.
Yeah,
he's also a professor that I had at Northwestern. So love what they're doing there. We're huge supporters of them. They're huge supporters of us. So they were the ones behind the Westinghouse piece, which is really, really cool.
It was a great day.
Did he bring the red glasses?
Of course.
Of course he did.
I let him know that he's one of my favorite aliens. And then we talked about another one of ours, which is Sandy Castro. So also another woman leading the charge.
Yes. And I believe she's also speaking at the TechCrunch, Sandy, and Star Cunningham and many more at the TechCrunch meetup at Blue 1647 with Emil, who was just on the show Tuesday.
Totally.
So all this stuff coming together, lots of cool things coming around the city. I want to kind of kick off to Alita here for a second, because she, from my knowledge of Alita, is a stat machine. When we talk about Equal Pay Week, and also female members of boards and sort of the representation in Chicago, I try to do my job, whether it's a good job or not, I'm not sure, of promoting the city as a place that's female founder friendly and more in general, inclusivity friendly. Diversification is something that we want to hang our hat on, as I said. But let's be real for a second. Mm-hmm. How many companies actually have in Chicago or abroad actually have females on the board or in the founder, in the co-founder spot? Not talking about just female led only, but
sure,
you know, brought on. What does it look like?
Well, the good news for the Midwest and for Chicago is, while the numbers themselves are not strong, they're better than the national averages. Mm-hmm. So if you look at female founders who get funded, the 2017 numbers aren't out, but we can extrapolate from 2016, and that's less than 3% of female founders get funded. I actually worked with the Hyde Park Angels team when I was still there to build a database of female founders who were funded in 2017 in Chicago. And the actual percentage was 10%. So better than the national average.
Not great, but it's a lot higher actually than I thought.
It was higher. We were sad that we were happy.
Yeah.
That was kind of the way that we approached it. Still a dearth of women who are raising considerable amounts of capital. You had some leading the charge. So you had Andy Harris at High Ground. You had Amanda Lanner at Jelly Vision.
Who we just bumped into, by the way, walking out of Tech Nexus on her way here. She was there working there.
She's
so
incredible.
She is incredible. I have to not talk about her in every single...
Grabbed him and like, hey, you're coming on this show today.
You know, with that $20 million round for Jellyvision from UpData and a few other big rounds with female CEOs, we had some good representation there, but really it's happening at the earlier stages. Uh-huh. When we're looking at women of color, those numbers aren't as high. Yep. Obviously, there's a big win with Star Cunningham being one of just 26 African-American women to raise over $1 million.
Yep.
We, as a city, have done a better job than the national averages for a few reasons. There's been a lot of civic engagement. There are a lot of organizations like Women Tech Founders. There are a lot of organizations even like the Illinois Technology Association that is really responsible for putting on programs for women at different stages in their careers to get to the leadership levels.
Right.
But ultimately, when it comes to female representation, what we're seeing in Chicago that's interesting, even in venture capital, so representation is not strong in venture capital. Women are not represented in a strong way. I can tell you, when I was at HPA, there were only 27 Latino women in VC, and I was one of them, and that's nationally.
Yeah.
So less than 1%. For women who are
partners...
That's
insane, by the way.
Yeah,
that's a number that just
Yeah.
It is a shocking number in terms of just how small it is. But in terms of VC, for example, one thing that was interesting when I did my study, looked at hundreds of venture capital firms in the Midwest with female partners, where we saw really good representation, closer to parity, not quite there, was when we actually looked at CVC, corporate venture capital. Corporate venture capital was actually much better at representing women than overall venture capital, unless you were looking at firms like Investor, which is a female-founded fund for female founders and female-owned companies. But organizations like GE, for example, do a good job of putting women into venture capital roles. And so one of the things that I think positions Chicago in a good place for representation, equal representation, is the abundance of Fortune 500 companies, which have worked significantly harder to include diversity into kind of the fabric of how they operate and have since the 1980s. So as we see more of these corporate venture capitalists investing in companies, supporting organizations, partnering with these community initiatives around representation, I think that there's a lot of opportunity there. And that's what I was really finding when I was looking at the issue of diversity in STEM, because here's a place where Chicago's not doing a good job.
Yeah.
When it comes to the pipeline of diversity, people going into STEM who will become founders, we're doing a little bit better with women. We're not doing better with people of color. But you're seeing organizations like the Illinois Science and Technology Coalition partner with these major corporations who are really worried about where their talent is going to come from. Right. You're seeing organizations like the Chicago Tech Academy really focused on preparing the next generation of students to be in tech, to pursue tech as an opportunity. And a lot of their partnerships, a lot of their funding comes from these corporations. So I actually see that as a big advantage. And some of the things that make us seem less cutting edge as a city on the national stage are what I think will ultimately assist us in really making an impact and seeing change come from the center as opposed to the coasts in this area.
Yeah. Yes, and I want to add to this to make sure everyone knows that Alita did not even have a single piece of paper in front of her when she just spit all that out. She's just rolling. It's a cup of water and I think a pencil. I don't even think she's got a pencil. Her phone and a cup of water. That's all we got here. I want to piggyback on one of the things she talked about. All of it was great. Well, depending on how, relatively speaking, great dearth of information, not necessarily some of the information that we want to hear, but it at least spells out something positive. On the point of, you'll get a kick out of this, I think, both sides of this, on the point of Fortune 500, I think it's a huge opportunity, just like we talk about in the startup investment world, huge opportunity because of access to major partners that have a ton of money and they would much rather invest in other people's mistakes rather than something that's on their books.
Sure.
As a person who spent some time recently over lunch with a bunch of balding, older, white, overweight men determining progressive decisions on inclusivity, we had a conversation about the fact that this is maybe not something people want to hear, but it is a reality, and I think it's a good thing, even though it comes from a bad place. Not a bad place, but not a great place. And that is that these Fortune 500 companies realize that if they want to stay on the cutting edge and they want to continue to retain and hire great people, which goes to your ethos talent conversation down the road here, is they've got to hire diversely. And if they want to hire diversely and they want to hire diverse people who actually are good at their job and not just quota fillers, they're going to have to pay for them. So to the equal pay part, whether they want to do this or not from the top level for the right reasons, I can't speak for them. I don't feel like some of these people are coming from the right place necessarily. But the end game result is that they recognize a social pressure to do so.
That pressure just has to be increased.
And that pressure needs to be increased. But the reality is, we are in a unique position, Chicago, and I say we are in a very unique position to benefit, whether it's because we did a great job or we didn't and we were lucky, both all together, to actually have a unique position in the world as a very inclusive place for tech and startups, as well as just tech in general, not startups, but people, you know, women and people of color getting involved in development and getting real jobs, real high-paying jobs.
Right.
And then my feeling is, regardless of whether these fat, old, bald, white guys are happy with what's going on or not, I don't really care, because once the people who are talented are paid have a chance, they will excel, and then you're not going to fire people based on anything if they excel and bring you money. And so we've got this sort of shoe-in opportunity, I think. Whether or not it comes from a great place or not, like I said, I don't know.
When I see people who are really skeptical of diversity, which is common, especially because it's a change.
Shocking.
Change is difficult. What I would say is you don't have to think about it for the moral reasons. Just look at the numbers. Deloitte put out that study. You know, when you have a more diverse workforce, you're 35% more profitable than organizations that aren't diverse. Why would you leave money on the table? Mm-hmm. That seems just
that's
like
always
not
been
a good
our position. I feel like it's
capital.
Just it has always seemed stupid to leave half the ideas off because you don't like that they wear a dress or they're from a different place or whatever. It's just dumb.
And you need that. I would say, looking at the demographics, it's the easiest way to build that marketplace of ideas. And this is where innovation comes from. Yeah. Innovation is built on creative abrasion, right? And then integrative decision. So ultimately, if you want to innovate, what you have to do is build a marketplace of ideas that are as disparate and wide-ranging as possible. And then you have to find ways to pull these ideas together to make those integrative decisions, things that you didn't think should go together. That's where innovation comes from. If you pull people from different groups into an organization, you just generate more ideas and you get more abrasion, you get more friction.
Which this is social innovation, literally. I mean, you're talking about, and we're not talking about just black, white, Hispanic, whatever it is, female, male, trans, whatever. We're talking about old, and I don't mean age generation, but I mean older thought model, past practices being mingled with people who are just accustomed to a more diverse set. Like, I'm just used to working and hanging out with a more diverse group.
Right. I think it really depends on the way that a corporation tries to do this. Right. So by just taking the lower level,
totally
let's pay minimum wage and let's bring in some diverse people, that's not going to fix your problem.
Right.
And as people are more aware of the way that this all works, to make real change happen, you have to start at the top. You have to start with your boards. You have to start with your leadership. And that's the way that you're going to spread through the organization to make those profitable organizations happen.
I agree. And I think, you know, we have a mutual contact on this one with Capital One.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really love the Women Who Code and Men as Allies program, not just because it helps bring women who code into the system, but it also helps mend the thing so that it's guys aren't feeling uncomfortable and like
community.
It's a one thing. They're building this initiative together so that, to your point, Terry, when you have individuals, let's say, use Amanda Lanner as an example. When you put someone like Amanda Lanner at the top of a company like Jellyvision that's on the cutting edge technologically, and she is responsible for hiring and mentoring male and female, but particularly female developers, it's a place where there's almost a guarantee, just looking back at, historically speaking, doesn't matter what gender, sex, whatever, everything is, people who have a position where they get mentored by someone of her caliber, or anyone's caliber for that matter, have a very, very strong likelihood of spinning off their own thing.
I can attest to that because Amanda has been my mentor for 3.5 years.
There
and
you
when
go.
I was determining if I was going to start this company, I was on the phone with her. It was Christmas Eve. She was at the mall with her daughter, didn't want to go into the Lush store, took my phone call, and I was telling her all the reasons why I shouldn't do it, which are characteristically reasons that women, particularly in tech, will shy away from doing something like a new venture. And she said, stop it. Stop being a girl.
Yeah.
Don't worry about letting people down. No man has ever worried about that, ever. Let's talk about the business. And, you know, what I would say to that is absolutely, when you have somebody like that in a position of leadership who is really bringing up the next generation within their own company and outside of their own company, you do get more of this talent taking risks because they see it has worked. There is not that fear, I'm going to be the only one. I'm not going to be able to make it. I don't have a support system. People haven't done this before me. And so that's why it's so important. Yeah. And it's why women and people of color leave tech at really high percentages. Women leave at 45% higher rates than men. Yeah. And it's at the mid-levels because they don't see women in leadership. Yeah. And they say, if there are no women in leadership, I'm not going to get to leadership. I'm going to go to an industry where I'm better represented because I have a fair shot.
Yeah. Right? No, that makes perfect sense.
What we try to do with Women Tech Founders is to build an army of role models. So literally, it's not just women overall, but it's every type of woman that you're going to see on that stage. So everyone that's sitting in the audience can see someone that looks like them and has done incredible things. And it's in every industry. We've really made a focus of making sure whatever your dream is, you can reach that potential. And here's somebody that can show you how. And it's not about having one leader in a company. It's not about Amanda Lanard. It's about all the different leaders and their different styles and the different types of experiences that they have gone through. As Amanda may have come from one type of experience in one socioeconomic bracket, but a lot of other women, that's going to be very hard for them to relate to. And you need to have all those women at the table. And maybe you'll go to Amanda Lannert for one type of advice, and you'll look to her as a role model for one thing. But you're looking at Star Cunningham for other types of advice, and you're looking at Dima for another. I mean, there are incredible women mm-hmm. that are great role models all over, and we're just starting to see the peak yeah. of who they are. They're just starting to come out. They're just starting to have the confidence to say, yeah, me too. I'm here, and I have a message that I want to share too. And that's the way you start changing the conversation.
No, I totally agree. And I think it's, to your credit in this, it's it's important that we don't just make a star out of one person. Mm-hmm. Because you see that on the West Coast. There's like a handful, Sheryl Sandberg. And I think she's brilliant and everything's amazing that she works on for the most part. But it's the only name you get. Like, that's all you hear.
Exactly. That's one of the things that we did last year was the Women in Tech Awards, where we broke down 12 different verticals. So women that are being recognized from their community, they're nominated from their community, they're voted on from their community, but they're in everything from glam tech to biotech yeah. to manufacturing. And it's really a way that we can showcase the value of all of these women and what they're contributing and how they're contributing very uniquely.
Yeah, I think it's important. The representation piece is important. What do you guys collectively think from the standpoint of like what's something that, you know, we've talked about sort of things that need to be done and that there's some things we need to do to work on getting it better. What
sure.
What are some other things that we can work on right now that are not something that's just going to take time and evolution? What are some things like right now today
yeah.
companies can do to improve this?
You know, we just had a conversation collectively. So Terry, Alita, and I are part of a group here in Chicago through Sales Assembly and Jeff Rossett's organization that is having tactical conversations around let's bring together stakeholders. You know, Michelle Bess over at Sprout Social is a part of that group. And, you know, the point is made that in startup and in trying to scale a company, you're really looking at revenue and you're not always able to take a step back and really understand how you can, you know, spend a little bit more time now to really escalate or accelerate the growth of your company through diversity yeah. initiatives or inclusion, you know.
Yeah.
But what we kind of think is the golden goose, so to speak, is the fact that Fortune 500 companies and all these organizations who've had the ability now that they have capital and now that they're, you know, doing pretty well to invest in those kinds of programs is there's a little bit of a how-to guide, but there's no published or documented place where startups can go to start putting that in at kind of the foundation level. So I think it's about creating transparency around what are best practices in this that, you know, Cap One and Sprout Social and all of the great organizations that are doing well in this yeah. realm. What are they implementing and how can people use that as kind of shared collective knowledge to incorporate right at the beginning?
And I think we have to talk to founders in really clear terms about what it's doing to their businesses and how expensive it is for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because consistently, I mean, I managed 45 portfolio companies. The ones who were repeat founders and had gone through serious people problems understood that representation was important.
Yeah.
The first-time founders didn't because they
right.
were trying to get their product off the ground. Mm-hmm. They were trying to go sell. They were trying to worry about their next raise. And they don't think about their people as their biggest asset or as the way that that product gets built and those customers get sold and that round gets raised. And so showing them really clearly, you lose money because, for one, when you don't have representation, your churn rate is higher.
Yeah.
When you don't build programs that support diversity, just a simple onboarding program. It doesn't even have to be a diversity and inclusion program.
Right.
Simply by doing 90 days of onboarding, which should be standard, but no one does
yeah.
At the early stages, will retain diverse talent because they'll be given the tools they need to be successful and they'll be giving learning and training. You know, that's over the whole course of the organization. There was a study done on organizations across industries that found that 30% of new hires leave in the first 6 months because they don't know what their role is, they're not appropriately socialized, and they don't know what their path is. Those last two are especially important to people who are diverse, who come from diverse backgrounds. Not appropriately socialized means they don't build a peer group or colleagues or connections. They don't feel welcomed or accepted. And then not a clear career path.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see people like them, and they're not being told, hey, we're changing this. And then I think the biggest thing is the leadership within these organizations needs needs to take a position and say, hey, we're not doing this well, but we want to because it's really important and it's going to drive revenue. You guys make money. We make money when we do this. It's the right thing to do, but I think right now we're focusing so much on the right thing to do that it becomes a nice to have instead of a must have. And we need to shift the conversation to you're losing money, your organization could close because you're not paying attention to this
problem. If people are starting to look at the trends of where things are going, it becomes more and more apparent that that 35% of profitability is going to hit them. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, and I'm going to close out this conversation by getting myself dug into a hole, but then I get to turn off recording, so then I don't get in trouble on the air. But I'm gonna do it anyway. And maybe you guys will agree with this. I hope you do agree with this. But to your point, Alita, I think one of the things that I consistently see is when you said it becomes a nice to have and not a must. I think that when we're talking about early stage, very early stage founders here. If they're not positioned with a co-founder who's of a different race or a different gender or whatever the deal, as a happenstance, and then they're tasked with hiring their first team, if it's something where you're trying to teach them about diversity and you're doing it because you should, and it's like this kind of like little bit of a game where it's like, yes, of course it's good. And we talked about earlier with the Fortune 500, it's like if it happens as a result of something else, like as long as it happens, right, it's good. But what I'm finding is the founders need to be put in front of high quality candidates who are female, minority, whatever the case, in a away from the office, not during the application process, through events, through dinners, special invitation stuff, games, I don't care what, volunteering, whatever the case. We've got to find a way, and I know everyone's busy and all this shit, and you hear it all day long, we've got to find a way to get founders of companies to start hanging out and mixing and doing things that are not their daily business with people who don't look like them. Because for me personally, like I grew up, we talked about this on another podcast with Rajiv. I did a Raj Nation show the other day. I grew up in a place where everyone looked like me. It's a bunch of white dudes with blonde hair, frosted tips, blue eyes, and some sort of stupid little J. Crew outfit. That was what I grew up with. That's all I knew, right? And so in order for me to start realizing, like, when I build a company, who would I hire? My first company, I hired a bunch of dudes that looked just like me. That's what happened. Company folded. I don't think it had to do with that, but it was a similar thing. It was only when I started going to different events, Women Tech Founder events, hosting Technori things, interviewing people from all over the place, I started being like, wow, your background is something I've never heard before. Terry is a perfect example. Your background is something I've never seen before. That is valuable. And that makes me start to see the world in a different light.
Totally.
And now when I look to hire candidates, I'm not looking black, white, female, male, whatever. I'm just looking like, wow, really exotic background, really unique. And then it turns out, oh, it's a girl or it's a boy or it's whatever. I just think that we really need to be careful when we mentor founders to make sure that we don't make it about hiring diversely, but rather about living a diverse life and let the hiring kind of be afterward.
Yeah, I think if you really open up your mind to it.
Ding.
Oh, are we doing?
No, we're good. No.
If you really open up your mind to it, you wind up with so many highly qualified people. It's just that I think the unconscious bias of it all,
exactly, right.
You have to be aware that that's happening with all of us.
Even totally. In your job descriptions.
Totally.
Yeah. You know?
Very cool. Well, this is awesome. Thank you for all just sort of like taking time and talking about this. We'll go around the table real quick here on where to reach and follow. Terry, where do we follow Women Tech Founders and get in touch with you?
WomenTechFounders.com, but we also are doing a conference right now at MidwestWomenInTech.com.
Very cool. Alita?
You can follow me on Twitter or Medium at Alita, A-L-I-D-A-M-W. And you can also go to my website, AlitaMirandaWolf.com. Next week, I'll be launching my new company website, which will be EthosTalent.com.
Very cool. And Beth?
At Beth Bond.
Boom. There you go. You can reach me and Technori at Technori or me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.